This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety. Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 46. Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm your host, Sean from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
I can almost see again.
Well,
we'll talk about that in a minute.
Then let's just jump right into the Tactical Dog and Fitness Report. 27.7 dog walking miles, and Dices really likes the new dog park.
Good.
Yeah, they've got some footing in there that's it's dry, you know, it rains, and then the water soaks in, and you don't end up with a muddy dog.
That is fantastic. How do I get that stuff for my backyard?
I don't know. I could ask. I just wish everybody knew how to enter a dog park with their dog.
Oh, those people.
Well, I mean, if they don't know any better, they don't know any better, right? I mean, nobody's told them. It's not like there's instructions.
Yeah. Well, there are at my dog park. There's a big sign with instructions, yeah.
Put your dog on a leash, bring it into the little containment area, close the gate behind you. This is important.
Yes.
Then take your dog off the leash, let them sniff the other dogs through the gate, open the gate, walk through the gate before your dog. The dog will follow you in, you push the other dogs out of the way. There's not so many fights.
Right.
That's all there is to it. And also, if your dog's already in the park, don't let him mob the dog as he comes in.
Yeah. So, last week I had PRK, which is an older version of LASIK. So, LASIK, with most people, what happens is they go in, they have the LASIK procedure, they go home, they take their Valium, they go to sleep, they wake up 4 hours later, and they can see perfectly.
Yeah, basically that's what happened.
Yeah. So, with PRK, because of the way that it's done, and I have the eyes of an 86-year-old man, so they didn't have enough material there to do LASIK. They had to do the old PRK version. It's actually about 2 weeks before you can really see clearly.
Uh-huh.
And it's about 6 weeks total before you're fully recovered. And I'm a week in, so I'm wearing sunglasses right now because my monitor's bright.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to be okay because every morning when I wake up, I can see very clearly. And the first morning, it was like 35 seconds that I could see clearly. And then I started getting a haze. And this morning, I could see clearly for about 15 or 20 minutes.
Oh, that's nice.
And I can read now. I couldn't read for the first 4 days.
I noticed it took you a while to respond to my emails.
Yes.
Yeah, I got LASIK. And the hardest part about LASIK is when I got LASIK, I wore safety glasses all the time. I worked in a power plant.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they were prescription.
Right.
So I never took them off.
Right.
And then I got LASIK. I didn't need prescription safety glasses. So I used the cheap disposable safety glasses. And I took them off when I went into the control room. And then I tried to put them back on and poke myself right in the eye with the safety glasses.
Oh!
That was unpleasant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty ironic. I about put my eye out with safety glasses. Well, and now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. This week, Aaron's going to talk about staying hydrated during the hot summer season.
Come on, every pony. It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Paulette.
Aaron, we both live in states where it gets really hot in the summer, and it's only going to get hotter for the next 2 months. Last week, we talked about what to do if the AC runs out, but how do we stay healthy when we're out and about?
Well, you're former Army, Sean. What was the number one thing your sergeants were always on your case about when you were in the field?
Drink water!
Yes, exactly. While there are several elements to hot weather survival, the biggest of all of them is to stay hydrated. I believe the rule of thumb that the Army uses is drink until your urine is clear. And this is excellent advice for people who are active during the hottest parts of the day. Now, if you're going to be in a location where such a thing wouldn't look out of place, I would suggest filling up a bladder like a camelback and drinking from it constantly. Now, you can buy carriers for them in a military configuration with lots of molly straps, but you can also get them in sporty civilian styles and colors. My local Walmart, for example, has 1 liter bladder backpacks in the sporting goods aisle that people use when bicycling. And I have taken a bladder like this to my local shooting range. I get some strange looks from other people at first, but as the day wears on, those looks turn to longing because I'm still drinking and they're running out. And another trick you can do to make your experience more comfortable is to fill the bladder with ice cubes and then top it off with cold water. Not only will the ice keep your water cold, but as it melts, it becomes more water for you to drink.
That's a good idea and all, but come on. I'm not going to take a camel back to the beach.
Well, if you're worried about looking cool, then I suppose you can get away with using a 1 liter water bottle in either metal or Nalgene. Make sure it's wide mouth, though, because you will want to add ice to your drink. And if you're going to be drinking from a bottle anyway, consider a sports drink like Gatorade or Emergen-C to help replenish the salts and other electrolytes you may have sweated out of your body. Citrus fruits are also good for this, as are melons. There's a reason orange slices are given to athletes at halftime, and why watermelon is a favorite summertime treat. Another thing you can do is limit salty foods and drinks that contain caffeine or alcohol. All of these contribute to dehydration.
So, drink water and Gatorade? That's it?
Well, it's not exactly it. The rest of hot water survival is making sure your core body temperature doesn't rise to dangerous levels. If you're going to be in direct sunlight for more than a few hours, put on sunscreen. While sunblock doesn't keep you cooler, it protects your skin, and sunburned skin loses moisture faster than healthy skin, and of course it hurts as well. Be sure to reapply every few hours, as it's easy to sweat off. Wear a hat to keep your face shaded, and as much clothing as you can comfortably wear. A damp cloth around the neck or against the wrists can also act as a heat exchanger to help cool off the blood via veins near the surface. And if you live in an area that isn't incredibly humid, you can create what's known as a swamp cooler by putting another damp cloth under your hat and over your neck. As the water evaporates, it will create a cooling effect. And finally, be sure to rest often. If you find that your muscles are cramping up, that's a possible sign of dehydration or even heat exhaustion. So take a rest in a shady spot, drink something cold, and eat something rich in potassium and magnesium. A cold banana from the cooler or the fridge is perfect for this.
You mentioned heat exhaustion. What's the difference between that and heat stroke?
That is such a good question, Sean, that I am actually not qualified to answer it. So next week, I'm going to have mutual friend of the podcast, Kelly Grayson, on to explain the differences between dehydration, heat exhaustion, and heat stroke, how to recognize the signs of each, and what first aid can be performed in those situations.
All right, Aaron. It was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com. Felon's behaving badly. Homeowner shoots and kills motorist who shot woman. A homeowner shot and killed a motorist east of uptown Charlotte Tuesday as the motorist pointed a gun at a woman he'd already shot. Police identified the man who was shot and killed as Suspect 31. The woman police said suspect shot and injured was suspect's grandmother. Police said the suspect and his grandmother were traveling in a vehicle on the 1200 block of Pegram Street near East 15th Street in Central Charlotte when they began to argue. Suspect then shot his grandmother in the leg, police said, causing her to lose control of the car, which then struck a telephone pole. Police have not released the woman's name or the name of the homeowner who shot and killed suspect. Police said the homeowner did not know suspect and suspect's grandmother. The fatal shooting will be reviewed by the Mecklenburg County District Attorney's Office to determine if any charges will be filed against the homeowner, police said. Suspect and his grandmother had left their vehicle when suspect continued shooting at her at about 9:40 a.m., police said. The homeowner who was inside his residence heard the shots and saw the man pointing a handgun at the woman, police said. The homeowner then shot the man who was armed with a handgun, police said. Medic took suspect to Carolina's Medical Center where he was pronounced dead, police said. Medic took grandmother to the Carolinas Medical Center with non-life-threatening injuries, police said. No one else was injured, police said. Police were canvassing the neighborhood for more witnesses Tuesday.
All right.
So, who shoots his grandmother while she's driving him around?
A really nice guy.
Right. She was taking him to choir practice.
Yes, on his way to choir practice.
Trafficking, Schedule 2, 7-27-2004, Felon Class G. Trafficking Schedule 2, 727, 2004, Felon Class G. Possession of a firearm by a felon, Felon Class G. DWI Level 1, 10-21, 2011, Misdemeanor Non-Classification Code. So when I found this, they hadn't gotten all the details yet. It was like the same day, right? Well, the next day, more details come out. The next day, more details come out. I found video.
Okay.
What really gets me is the reaction of the friend of the felon who was trying to shoot his own grandmother.
That man didn't have to kill him like that. And I understand he felt like he was going to help that lady, but he could have shot him in a defense tactic.
What? I'm sorry, darling. He did shoot him in a defense tactic. Defense being he dead now.
What exactly is shooting somebody in a defense tactic?
I don't know. I think that's... Is that a colloquialism for shoot him in the leg?
I don't know.
That is... Okay.
But wait, there's more.
He could have just shot him that one time and let the police come and handle it.
Which is basically what he did. He shot him one time.
Okay.
And let the police handle it.
Yeah, it just was, you know, a good shot.
Exactly. At least one neighbor has a differing opinion.
It saved his grandmother's life, so what, you know, how much more can you do?
I completely agree with that statement.
WSOC-TV caught up with the grandmother the next day, and she told them about the incident.
And when I turned around again, he shot him. He fell. Then he stood over him. I started crying. I said, look, you already shot. I said, don't shoot. I said, don't kill my grandson. Because he's standing over him as if he was going to shoot him in the head. I said, don't do that. Please don't do that. I said, he's laying right there. He can't do nothing. Don't shoot him no more. And he looked up at me. He looked at my grandson. Then he walked away.
All right.
We didn't shoot him again. Two things about this. One, guy came out of his house, put a round into the ground as a warning shot. Guy started shooting at his grandmother again. Grandmother says in this video, you've absolutely got to see this. She starts talking about how guy shot and the guy, her grandson, says, oh, you're going to shoot at me? And started shooting at grandmother again.
What?
So the okay. Homeowner, see, the homeowner is not just a homeowner. He's a former assistant district attorney.
Okay.
Right. So I'm pretty sure this guy knows what the law is.
Yes.
And the guy shot him and killed him. Apparently, according to the video I'm watching, it looks like he shot twice. Once in the ground, once into the shooter.
So how well did he really know the law if he used a warning shot?
I don't know.
Is that legal in North Carolina?
The law is pretty much the same everywhere. If you can use deadly force, you can use less than deadly force. Anybody who tries to tell you this BS that, oh, if you use something less than deadly force, that means that you thought it wasn't important to use deadly force, so therefore, you know, that's baloney. Dude shot his grandmother. Grandma has a bullet hole in her leg. It was a deadly force encounter. He tried to stop it with less than lethal, and that didn't work, and he put a round into him. The other thing that's interesting about the video is when grandma's describing him standing over her grandson holding a gun, she's miming holding a long gun.
Nice.
So I think dude rolled out of there with an AR and put one in the 10 ring, and that was the end of the story.
Yes. Well, any long gun at that distance would probably do it.
Yeah. Just remember, only shoot people in a defense tactic.
Yes.
Whatever that is.
Whatever that is.
Well, this week on Foreign Policy for Grownups, Nikki talks about Greece going bankrupt and defaulting on their debt. Well, Nikki, it looks like Greece went ahead and defaulted on $1.7 billion worth of a loan from the International Monetary Fund. No one's surprised by this. We talked about Greece being a deadbeat cousin at the EU reunion, so how can they fix this?
Well, Greece could make a payment to the IMF, because until it does, it's cut off from all IMF resources. But of course, Greece doesn't actually have the money to pay the IMF, so it's asked the European Union to give it yet more money so it can pay the IMF. Yes, get this straight. Greece defaulted on a loan meant to help it out of an economic pickle by requesting another bailout to the tune of $32 billion from the EU to get it out of its economic pickle. Is your head spinning yet? So basically, it's like opening another credit account to pay for the old credit card on which you defaulted. It would be hilarious if it wasn't so pathetic. And what's more pathetic is Greece's entitlement mentality. It rejected stern conditions the EU wanted to impose if it was to give them yet more money, because somehow, well, it's entitled. And, you know, I've seen this mentality before. I was in Europe in Brussels in 2010, and Greece was on the verge of economic collapse. So I was watching CNN in my hotel room, and the CNN international reporter was interviewing random Greeks on the street who claimed they were entitled to a bailout. They were entitled to other nations' money. That's why they joined the European Union in the first place, so they could get money when they needed it, and it took considerable willpower not to punch that hotel TV that day. I'm not even kidding. You know, what's even more amusing, if you could call it that, is the lack of self-awareness, this lack of economic knowledge, this lack of historical awareness of these dumbass communists in Greece. A CNBC reporter was interviewing a neckbeard Greek hipster douche recently who just couldn't understand that communist policies precipitate economic collapse.
I think that the first time that humanity has tried to reject capitalism in favor of communism, in favor of a society that will have no classes, has failed because there was not the experience yet. People were not prepared to face the new problems, mainly the bureaucracy that came and actually performed a political counter-revolution, actually took the power back from the people in favor of a bureaucratic elite.
Seriously, neckbeard? You fail to realize how it's possible that in a country where two-thirds of the population is employed in the public sector and where the tax collection mechanisms are practically non-existent, allowing millionaires to pay taxes on maybe 13,000 euro per year, and where expenditures far exceed revenues, this could happen? You blame it on the political elite? The bureaucratic elite? It's not the bureaucracy that kills communism. It's the unsustainable economic model. A model that even the World Bank a few years ago told communist China it couldn't sustain. And China's not even a pure communist system. Apparently, the concept of being unable to consume more than you have produced and then cooking the books to cover it up is perfectly acceptable. Boy, the stupid burns hard with this one.
So what's next for Greece?
Well, the idiots of Syriza are being all defiant because, see, we're entitled or something. So Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras voted to press ahead with a controversial bailout referendum and urged Greeks to vote no on the creditors' demands. That's right, let me say that again. This douche is seeking help from the European Union while seeking to dictate the terms on which he gets said help. Because a deadbeat nation that's relying on the rest of the EU to bail it out is somehow in the position to tell those who are bailing it out how it will pay back the money. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, the EU is being a pathetic weakling as they decided to wait until after the Greek referendum, where Greece is going to tell the EU that the money it's providing, giving to Greece to help Greece out, will be paid back only on Greece's terms before making a decision on the bailout. Hello?
Why are they being such wusses?
Why? Because it's the EU, really. Now, the EU considers a Greek exit from the Eurozone incredibly risky. They're very committed to the euro. Greece's debt load is nearly 200% of its gross domestic product, or GDP. So they exit the Eurozone, and they force their creditors to lose money. The banks then clamp down on lending. Banks clamp down on lending. Spending goes down. Spending goes down. GDP tumbles. Money exchange is what makes an economy churn, you know. And when the exchange of money slows, so does the economy. Additionally, there's the risk of contagion as well. Nervous depositors in other struggling Eurozone countries like Spain or Italy may start moving their money to the safety of German banks, sparking a banking crisis in Southern Europe. And confidence in other banks that have lent heavily to Southern Europe, such as French banks, could also be affected. So the banking crisis could conceivably spread worldwide like it did in 08. As for Greece, well, it's unable to borrow from anyone, not even other European governments. The Greek government could simply run out of euros. It's very easy. It's not going to have money. It won't be able to get more loans, and it won't be able to pay its significant public sector. So if two-thirds of your population isn't getting paid, guess what's going to happen? Riots, run on banks, economic collapse. Personally, I think the Greek PM is kind of a moron. He's so married to his Keynesian theology, he's actually willing to risk his nation's entire economy and is playing chicken with the rest of the EU, counting on the Europeans to fold in fear of a Greek exit. Because, as we all know, the Europeans are kind of spineless about this. Me, well, I think they should just get out, frankly. They'll learn very quickly who needs whom more when the majority of their people can't afford milk and bodily kicks out idiot Syriza politicians to the curb. That would be a sight for sore eyes. I would love to see that. That said, given how Syriza has been dutifully kissing Russia's rump, it's conceivable Greece could turn to Putin for some monetary help. Problem is, Russia isn't exactly in the position to bail Greece out, at least not to the extent that it needs to be bailed out. But Syriza cozying up to Putin, especially being a NATO member, that, to me, is a real security concern.
All right, Nikki. It was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com. Strange laws.
So, Sean, you've had people like come to you and say, hey, so I've got this problem. There's this guy threatening me. You know, what do I need to do? Can I just go ahead and carry a pistol? And you tell them.
Dude, that's like a class 2 misdemeanor at a minimum. And God help you if you do anything else.
Here in Tennessee, we have this awesome, awesome law. It's TCA 3917-1322. You cannot be convicted or even charged with any gun-related crime in Tennessee if the only reason the cops know that you had a gun is because you use it in self-defense. So when I have people come to me and ask me that same question, I'm like, yeah, just carry. Like, you're okay. Yes, you're technically committing a crime, but if you have to plug that ex-boyfriend, you're not going to get in trouble. Here is the actual text of the law. A person shall not be charged or convicted of a violation under this part being the firearms section of Tennessee Code, if the person possessed, displayed, or employed a handgun in justifiable self-defense or in justifiable defense of another during the commission of a crime in which that person or the other person defended was a victim. So that's pretty clear cut, right?
Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty clear to me. But yeah, I mean, how does that work, you know, when the rubber meets the road?
So I had always heard this and I had always, you know, kind of told people, hey, look, you know, we have this law, but I didn't really know if it was going to be, you know, if there's like, well, you know, it says that, but we're not really going to care. So here's a story from about a month ago out of Knoxville. The man who shot and killed an armed robbery suspect at a Knoxville convenience store may avoid charges under Tennessee law, despite the fact he was a felon with a gun. Shooter, 42, of Knoxville, was at a Breadbox convenience store early Monday on Asheville Highway when 18-year-old suspect held the clerk at gunpoint. Shooter, a friend of the clerk's, shot and killed suspect. A previous felony conviction would ban Shooter from carrying the gun he used, but Tennessee law says the fact he protected someone else means the gun charge doesn't matter. It trumps any other firearm charges that might exist per statute. Now, the only thing that could come into play is it doesn't preclude the federal government, said Knoxville attorney Don Bosch, who is not directly connected to the case. Shooter is a felon with past convictions for aggravated assault and possession of a weapon more than 10 years ago. So far, no charges have been filed against him, and Knoxville police say they consider the case closed. KPD did confiscate his gun.
They were going to do that anyway, so whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, they were going to do that anyway, but yeah, you know, sometimes the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is the other bad guy with a gun.
It's not the weapon, it's how you use it.
Exactly, exactly. So, good for him. He probably was terrified that he was going to go back to prison.
But his friend wasn't dead.
But his friend wasn't dead, and he really probably didn't care. Good for you, sir.
Yep. Can't condone what you did in your past, but that was the right decision. Well, during the Draw Muhammad terror attack, the would-be killers made the mistake of attacking a place where people might shoot back. This week, our special guest, the editor of BearingArms.com, Bob Owens, offers some handy advice to terrorists who want to bring guns to America and murder our citizens. I'd like to welcome Bob Owens to the show. Bob is the editor of BearingArms.com, a gunsight alumnus, an East Carolina University graduate with a master's degree in English who survived 5 years behind enemy lines in Newburgh, New York, but finally came home to the Raleigh, North Carolina area, dragging his Yankee wife behind him. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Well, we now know that the jihadis who tried to attack the Draw Muhammad event in Garland, Texas, were indeed engaged and hit by the 60-year-old Garland traffic cop, but it was actually the Garland SWAT team who anchored them permanently. Clearly, the jihadis made mistakes, the first of which was not recognizing that Garland had hired Chuck Norris to work their traffic detail. But maybe they got used to the easy pickings in Europe. In the spirit of Chris Rock's famous video, Bob wanted to offer them some advice. He calls it Tips for Terrorists.
So it's really quite simple. States to avoid: Texas, even Austin, the entire South, all of it, especially even the part of the South that's not really Southern, Florida. Actually, the more I think of it, maybe you should just avoid most of the states. Perhaps your best option are to look at a handful where you're not allowed to own firearms or have them have those rights heavily restricted, such as New Jersey, Maryland, Massachusetts, Connecticut, California, and downstate New York. If you go to upstate New York, you're going to find that that's a lot like Texas with some very funny accents. You might want to look for bumper stickers. They may clue you in if you see different brands of guns, if you see Gadsden flags, if you see pickups in general, probably not a good place for you to be. If you happen to find that you are in an area where people are wearing more 5'11 tactical clothing than they are Dockers, you may want to stay away. So, why are we saying that it's okay to go after some of these states, but not the majority of them? Well, the fact of the matter is we don't think going after any of them is a good idea. But there are certain states where citizens still retain their constitutional rights for self-defense, more so than others. And the unfortunate citizens of the states we listed, New Jersey, Maryland, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, and California, unfortunately have been run into the ground by anti-gun Democrats who are far more concerned about their citizens being able to defend themselves from the government than they are foreign attackers. And so they don't have very many rights as far as it comes to carrying firearms in self-defense for concealed carry. They do not have decent self-defense laws that allow citizens to defend themselves from enemy attackers. And they restrict the kind of firearms that people are allowed to own. This creates a lack of a gun culture.
Why don't we contrast this incident in Garland, Texas, with something relatively similar in, say, Boston? Two people with some guns chased by the police. The Garland police anchored him right then and there. How many rounds do you figure they fired?
To the best we can determine, the officer who opened fire with his pistol probably fired a magazine of 13 rounds out of his Glock G21, reloaded and began firing again, and then responding SWAT team officers came in and each fired perhaps 3 or 4 shots each to anchor these two guys down. If you want to compare that to another incident where we had 2 terrorists encountered by SWAT officers, you may want to look at the Boston Marathon bombers, where the various Boston police units in the 2 different encounters they had with those brothers, the initial shootout and then the one where they had locked down the younger brother to a boat, they fired roughly 1,000 rounds between those 2 incidents, didn't kill anyone. And that's very fortunate since most of their rounds went downrange. They did manage to wound the older brother, who was then promptly run over by the younger brother. And then when they opened up with automatic weapons, they managed to hit a lot of boat and a lot of air and only a little bit of terrorist. And he survived to be put on trial and has just finally earned the death penalty that he should have earned if they could shoot straight.
Right. So this tells us the difference between people who grew up with guns. A lot of the cops down here grew up with guns, and a lot of people in Boston who didn't grow up around guns at all.
That would seem to be a fair assessment based upon what we know from both of these incidents.
So if you're a terrorist, look for places where nobody can carry guns first, because if they can't carry, they can't shoot back. And the other reason is because the police there are less likely to be used to shooting because they didn't grow up doing it.
Gun cultures matter, folks. If you belong to a gun culture, you have a better chance of surviving an incident like this. If you are a terrorist and you show up in a place like this where there is a very strong and abundant gun culture, you are not going to live that long, as history has shown.
All right, Bob. It was good to talk to you. See you again soon.
Take care, Sean.
Bob Owens is the editor of BearingArms.com. Fun with headlines.
So this is going to be even more drastic than a fun with headlines. This is going to be: here's why you have to read multiple accounts of the same story in order to get a more accurate picture. President Obama came to my city this last week, And so local media was, you know, all over it, 24/7 coverage, et cetera, et cetera. So here's one of the stories on his visit from our local NBC affiliate. Demonstrators with Confederate flags line up outside of presidential visit.
Oh, now that's just low, man. That's just like low class.
Supporters of the Confederate flag were seen waving the flag outside of the school where President Obama is scheduled to give his remarks on healthcare later in the day. The demonstrators were gathered across the street from Taylor Stratton Elementary School in Madison. They said they hope the president will come outside and speak with them so he will understand what they're all about. We just want him to understand that this is heritage, that there is not any bit of hate coming from these flags. We can't be held accountable for one man making that mistake and shooting up that church, said one of the demonstrators. The Confederate flag has been a big issue in recent weeks, in the aftermath of the church shooting that killed 9 people in Charleston, South Carolina. Since then, several states have taken down the flag from government property, and many companies have vowed to stop selling products featuring the flag.
Right. You know, the black president, well, half black president, shows up waving a Confederate flag in his face. Just seems kind of low class.
And, you know, all these people, you know, showing up, lining up outside, you know, to wave the Confederate. I mean, that's just, that's awful, right? That's not really Nashville nice, is it?
No. No. Yeah, definitely. They must have come from somewhere else.
So that's the NBC affiliate. Our CBS affiliate, there's no story at all. They didn't have anything on these guys. Here's a story from the ABC affiliate, who, by the way, is the one I get most of my fun with headline stories from. Confederate flag-waving men use president's visit to educate public. 2 Confederate flag-waving men said they wanted to use President Obama's visit as an opportunity to educate the public Wednesday.
2?
2.
Well, I guess technically 2 points equals a line, so they lined up.
Yeah. Yeah. Continuing, these flags are about heritage, not hate. Those representing it as hate, we're asking them to stop, Rick Martin explained. We've got a lot of publicity on these that have been about hate. Martin added he feels like the devastating church shooting in South Carolina gave a negative perception of the Confederate flag. History can't be erased. You can't change it. Remember the history. Remember how we got where we are today, he said. While Martin said he doesn't agree with everything Obama has done in his 2 terms, he said he would have liked to have met the president.
As a former Marine, I wanted to be able to meet him, shake his hand, and thank him for allowing me to serve this great nation.
Martin and his friend decided to leave their post before President Obama arrived in Tennessee, saying they hoped they had spread some positive knowledge about the flag. He also said he'll be traveling to South Carolina for an upcoming Ku Klux Klan rally.
Oh, man. And he just was so great, and then he just screwed it up there.
Martin said he will not be participating in the rally, but he will be there to let members know that they shouldn't be using the Confederate flag to spread hate. Yeah. And the video that is in this article actually makes it even more clear that, no, really, he's just a good Southern boy and really there's no racism here at all.
I watched that video and he's what I think of when I think of a redneck. When I think of somebody who's a redneck, that's what I think of. I don't know where this media portrayal of rednecks are. I've met a lot of rednecks. I work with a lot of rednecks. And that's what rednecks are like.
Yeah.
That's what they're like. They're not these ignorant savages that you show in the media. They're good old boys like this.
But just remember, NBC affiliate, protesters lining up. ABC affiliate, 2 guys, 1 flag in a pickup truck.
Yeah. 2 good old boys who'd like to shake the president's hand.
Yeah. Good job, guys. Good job.
They've got their story and they're sticking to it.
Yep. The narrative.
Well, I'm sure you've seen the video. It was all over my Facebook feed. But is it true that your cell phone is spying on you with an antenna on its battery? Barron tells us what he thinks in
Tech Tips. Tech Tips. Tech Tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech Tips with the Barron.
Barron, I just saw this video where a guy takes a battery out of his Samsung phone, and he's claiming it's stealing all of his data. He unwraps it, and he pulls out an antenna. Are they bugging all of our stuff now, this blatantly?
Oh god, this f***ing asshole. Everyone, please repeat after me. I will not, under any circumstances, believe everything, especially crackpot conspiracy theories, I read on the internet. Seriously, if you did not repeat after me, please rewind and replay it repeating after me. I'll wait. Here's the thing. After Snowden, we have a large treasure trove of exactly what the government is really doing. We know how they're stealing our data. We know this stuff. There's lots of presentations from people who have been going through the Snowden docs detailing exactly what is going on. Not only that, there are tons of security researchers digging into this stuff. We have piles upon piles of information on how they're actually doing it, and I have yet to see a presentation saying how the government is stealing my data using my battery.
Well, I mean, it looked totally legit. How do they do that video?
Well, the fact of the matter is, there is actually an antenna on the battery. It's the antenna used for near-field communication. Have you heard of near-field communication, otherwise known as NFC?
I think I saw that on the option menu for, like, a feature I could enable or disable.
Yes, and it's designed to be close. And when I say close, I mean it's going to be quite intimate, as in your phone is technically bumping uglies with another phone. It's what's used for things like Apple Pay or sharing files with someone else via your phone.
Oh, so someone else could steal your files or financial info?
No, not really, because while you could use a high-gain directional antenna to work the system from a distance, there are a couple issues. One, applications are involved. For example, for the NFC protocol to work with your payment program, you need to open and authenticate with the program. That is, unless you're stupid and have your payment program run without authentication, in which case, drop and give me 100 push-ups right now. For files, there's an additional software stack that runs on top, and at best, someone might be able to push a file to you. Potentially dangerous, however, you should still need to accept the file. Two, you can actually disable the chip that controls the NFC protocol so that, survey says, nothing happens. Upshot here is you gain back some battery life by turning it off.
So in other words, you don't need to destroy a battery and tear a feature out of your phone that can make your life better?
Nope, and I highly recommend against it. We were talking previously about possible changes to the card payment system, and if done right, NFC is going to be at the core of secure payments in the future. So don't believe everything you see. Most of these people wouldn't even know half the features on their phone are, and much less how to use Tap to Pay, and often create items like this specifically to drum up drama and outrage to make it go viral and garner them attention. Much like the people who were panicking about the Messenger app.
All right, Baron. It was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org. The J-Block.
So, you know, we talked about I had that PRK eye surgery, and I had decided that I was going to go and shoot my 300 blackout pistol that I built before I went and did this, because I really felt like the biggest regret that I would have if I went blind during the surgery was having built this 300 blackout and never having shot it.
Not that you wouldn't be able to see your wife ever again.
Or my kids growing up or anything. No, no, that I would not have ever shot this pistol that I built.
You went full retard, man. Never go full retard.
So I go out to the Nashville Armory, which is probably one of the best ranges in the country. And 45 minutes before I went in to get my eye surgery, I'm there plugging away about 40 rounds of 300 blackout, supers, and subsonics.
Through a suppressor, right?
I did 4 rounds without a suppressor. Because I think we put a picture of this up a few weeks ago, but we'll do it again. I've got a 10.5-inch barrel with like a 2-inch muzzle brake on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an 11.5-inch tube handguard.
Right.
It doesn't have any holes in it, right? So that first round that went off, all that gas came back all the way back down and through the holes in the barrel nut and into my face. It was so bad. Huh, I was like, oh, okay, well, it's a good thing I'm wearing safety glasses.
Speaking of going blind?
Yeah. And then also, I guess I wasn't really prepared for it. The buffer tube came and hit me in the chin.
Right, because it's a pistol. You didn't have it braced.
Yeah, right, right.
Because that would be naughty.
Because that would be, yeah, that, you know, apparently that if you hold your revolver up against your shoulder and you shoot it, then that's now a short-barreled rifle.
You've manufactured it.
Hey.
Or remanufactured.
Yes. Anyway, I bought a few lowers a couple of weeks ago, and so I just went ahead yesterday and e-filed a Form 1 to SBR one of those lowers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of videos out there on how to do it. You have to have a trust.
Right.
So I filled that out yesterday. That was July 2nd, and apparently the e-file stuff is taking a little bit longer than it used to. It used to e-filed, you would have it back in like 30 days, but now they're saying maybe 60 days. Which is awesome, because the first time I filed a Form 4 for a suppressor, it was like 9 months.
Yeah, it was about 9 months for me, too. Yeah, I'm hearing 60 to 90.
Yeah.
Maybe a little longer. You never know.
So we'll see, because right now it's just a lower. So I don't have a stock. I don't have a trigger in it or anything like that.
Yeah. chunk of metal at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went out on my quest for sharpshooter. I went out and shot another IDPA match last Saturday, and I did pretty well. 14 out of 36, and that's not bad at all for somebody who hasn't done any practice in 3 months because I got lazy.
I haven't shot any handguns since October because baby.
I don't have any excuses. I was just being lazy. I kind of stopped doing dry fire when I came back from the NRA convention.
Oh.
Yeah.
Tisk, tisk.
And then, of course, I didn't have any money, so I didn't have any money to go to any IDPA matches.
Right.
So, but did pretty good. 14 out of 36. I think I've got a lot of improvement that I could make if I practiced. And I tried not to overperform, you know, tried not to go out there and shoot better than my level of skill.
Mm-hmm.
And just went out and did what I had to do. And what really strikes me about this is this practice has done wonders for my reloads. I'm wearing a collared polo shirt over two magazines that are in my belt.
Mm-hmm.
And I go dry and I reload and I don't think about it. The magazine magically appears in my hand and magically goes into the gun, and I just put the gun back in action and off I go. I don't even think about it anymore. And then I stopped and tried to think about it later, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not even considering what my left hand is doing while it's reaching down, pulling up my shirt, grabbing the magazine, pulling the magazine out and orienting it and loading into the gun. That's what practice does for you. So that tells me that when things go sideways, if they ever do, and I need a reload, I'm not going to be going, wait, wait, Mr. Bad Person, let me reload. Okay, first pull my shirt up. No, it's just going to come up. I'm just going to pull it, boom, and I'm going to have another magazine. I can keep my eyes up and in the fight.
And you carry a 14 plus one, don't you?
I carry 10 plus one in the gun and 13 on each of the reloads. I have two. So I'm carrying a considerable amount of 45.
You are.
That was the other thing, is that I took my old self-defense ammo, because I rotated out the self-defense. Remember I talked about going down to the store and getting a really good deal on self-defense ammo? Right. Well, I kept the old stuff and was going to take it to the range and shoot it up when I got a chance. Well, the next time I went to the range after that was this IDPA match. So I figured, what the heck? I got to burn it up anyway, right? What's it like shooting full power 200 grain plus P gold dot hollow points in an IDPA match? Well, the first stage is a big wide open bay. It's indoors, but it's an open bay. I went out, I did my shooting. Nobody really said anything, right?
Right.
I could feel that it was different. I mean, it hit a lot harder, but I'm not really paying attention to the recoil of the gun. I'm paying attention to, there's my target, shoot it. There's, you know, watch my sights, shoot the target. There's my sights, shoot that target. There's my sights again, shoot the next target, right? I'm paying attention to the things I need to be paying attention to, not how hard the gun is recoiling. I go to the next stage. The next stage is one of those traditional series of bays.
Oh, yeah.
So there's walls and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's talking. I've got the powered earmuffs so that, you know, I can hear what's going on around me, hear the range commands, right? Shooter ready, stand by, beep. And I pull out the gun and I start going to work. And I hear, what the? Is he shooting? And like, I was like, they were talking away, and then all of a sudden, all they could talk about was, my God, what the heck is he shooting?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
I mean, oh, boom, 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 and I go nail the targets one down the line, and I stop, and everybody's staring at me. I'm like, what? Well, I'm shooting full house. I'm shooting 200 grain plus P gold dot hollow points. Yeah. But it was really funny. I could hear it in the middle of, you know, there's just enough of my brain left over to hear people talking about what the heck is he shooting? And I'm thinking, it's my full power self-defense as I'm shooting to targets. Like, I've still got enough brain power left over to consider these subjects.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, practice does great. Definitely practice. Your reloads will way improve. You would not believe how much they will improve. And actually, surprisingly, full house ammunition doesn't make that much of a difference. Not at my level. Now, maybe it's going to make some difference in split times for people who are really, really, really good. But at my level,
yeah,
it doesn't make a difference. I'm going to be able to shoot the full house loads at people if I need to. And it's not, I'm not going to be like, oh, I can't hit my target because suddenly this recoils harder. Uh-uh.
Yeah. And so that's good to know, right? Like, I remember the very first time that I shot at an IDPA target at like 2 yards, right? And you get that back blast.
Uh-huh.
And I was doing that in a self-defense class, and they were like, okay, you need to do this because this is what's going to happen if you get bad breath distance to somebody who's trying to rob you and you shoot them. And you don't need to be surprised at that when that happens. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but it was a great time. And then immediately after that, I switched over to the 165 grain frangible stuff that we were given at the Lucky Gunner dinner from Team Never Quit?
Yes.
Right. So I had the 165 grain, I think it is, frangible 45 caliber round nose or flat nose, something like that. I don't know. And I had one gold dot hollow point, and then like all the rest of the magazines were filled with this Team Never Quit ammo. I told the safety officer, I said, look, I know you listen for the sounds to change. I've got one full house gold dot on top of everything else is a different. So it's going to sound different. Don't stop me. He's like, okay, cool. Thanks for telling me. I get to the end of that one in the open bay and everybody's like, what the hell is he shooting? I'm like, I could tell it was different. It was not recoiling as hard. Now, my standard 45 that I reload, it's making 750 feet per second. It's enough to make major in USPSA, but it's not full house ammo. It's not even like factory load. But, you know, this stuff was probably just rated at factory, and they're just not used to guys rolling out with a 45 and shooting factory ammo in an IDPA match. So,
but yeah. It did okay?
What is he shooting? Oh, yeah, it worked fine. I didn't notice any difference. It put holes in the target. It hit where I was aiming at. Any problems that it had were due to my bad aiming, not due to the ammo. And now, a word from our sponsor. You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the ten ring, but have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey. Or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state. And make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off. And don't forget that we're still accepting donations at gofundme.com/gunblogvarietycast. Every little bit helps towards getting us some better audio equipment. Bloomberg's spending more of his anti-gun money, this time on an anti-gun, anti-self-defense website, The Trace. Weird looks at one of his latest stories, an attack on the room-sharing website, Airbnb, in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery. Well, hey, Weird, what do you got going on this week?
So, I got this neat hit piece on Airbnb, and it's over on Bloomberg's The Trace. And let me tell you, it starts out with one of the greatest money quotes. It starts out talking about Uber and how they've announced a new policy. Uber announced a new policy this month by banning its drivers and passengers from possessing guns. 2 months after an Uber driver carrying a concealed weapon shot another man who had fired into a crowd in Chicago. The incident raised questions about the popular ride-sharing company's stance on guns. And then came Charleston, hence the firearms ban. Are you reading this the same way I am, Sean? It sounds like they wanted this driver disarmed so he wouldn't have stopped this mass shooting.
Does kind of sound that way, doesn't it?
I think this opening statement shows that the antis dislike guns being used for any reason, even reasons that save lives. There's certainly been a bunch of robberies of Uber drivers. There was a recent story where a driver stopped an attack with his personally carried firearm and has since been dismissed from Uber because he was violating the policy. So yeah, they don't like self-defense. So now the article is focusing on Airbnb because they have no specific gun policy. Essentially, all members must follow state rules. Duh. And the homeowner may have personal policies for guests. Airbnb does stipulate that the potential hazards in the home must be disclosed.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, Airbnb basically is like Uber, but for your house. Like you let people stay in your guest bedroom or something.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I understand it. I haven't used it. Again, the idea of stipulating this potential hazards to firearms just seems foolish. Who's going to leave an unsecured firearm while strangers are camping out in it? I mean, it's just as dumb as leaving jewelry or unsecured prescription medicine just hanging out in the house. I mean, that's just stuff that's going to want to walk off. And even with any protection policy, just you don't want to deal with that hassle. Now, the article points out that New York, essentially, you wouldn't be able to bring your guns to Airbnb because New York sucks to lawful gun owners. But they say in Texas, if you have your concealed carry permit, you could bring a gun into an Airbnb. Well, not really, because, hey, guess what? In a residence, you can go armed in most states, including Texas. And they define things like hotel rooms and lodging as your residence.
Yeah. What is the purpose of a concealed handgun permit? Is so that you can carry it concealed from the common view in public, not concealed from common view in your hotel room or your buddy's house, basically.
Yeah. So unless you're in like Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, I don't even think California has any restrictions on this. Nope. You can bring your guns into your Airbnb, and whilst you're puttering around in there, you can carry. So, yep. And they note that some homes are gun-friendly, but may request you to identify if you're bringing in your weapons, and some specify no guns allowed. But who cares? I mean, if you're carrying a concealed weapon, it's concealed. And, you know, you're strangers to them, they're strangers to you. I just don't see a point. But again, they just seem to be really, really desperately looking for a problem that they've got a solution for.
Well, the problem is they're terrified of guns and they want to spread that fear to everyone.
Yep. Well, the good news is it seems from everything I've read, Airbnb is not going to be stupid like Uber and stick its nose into the gun issue.
The part about this that really bothers me is that their view is that if you're letting somebody stay in your house, you should get rid of any firearms in your own house. Does that make sense?
To anti-gunners, why, yes, it does, because they want you to give up your guns.
Well, that is true.
Any port in the storm for anti-gunners.
So do you think that these guys at the Trace are going to get any traction at all with Airbnb?
As far as I could tell, it does not look like they're going to stick their nose into the gun issue. As quoted from the article, Airbnb did not return repeated calls for comment. Man, Sean, those Bloomberg bucks are not going as far as they used to.
Boom! Headshot!
I actually looked for video, audio, anybody but the Trace talking about Airbnb and guns. Found nothing.
Well, at least they have me reading them.
Yeah, that's about it. We're talking about their foolishness, and that's all the traction they're going to get.
Bloomberg's name is officially a poison pill, and unfortunately, before they launched the site, everyone let everybody know that this new site was coming up and it was being bankrolled by Bloomberg.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
All right, I'll talk to you later, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host at The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. Stuff that grinds my gears. The income tax.
Well, yes, you and everybody else who earns an income.
No.
No?
No. I don't mind the government making money. The government has to tax us. The government has things it has to pay for. That's just a fact of life. Government is supposed to be the things we all do together. Sometimes it's the stupid things that we do together. What bothers me is the income tax poisons anything it touches, which is basically everything. Why is your medical insurance tied to your job? The income tax. Why is the very first argument you hear for people in favor of expanding marriage to include non-traditional types of marriages? Because married people are taxed differently. How'd the Obama administration strike at Tea Party groups that might have organized against his re-election? By having the IRS delay and deny their tax-exempt 501c4 status. The minute some churches said they would not conduct weddings for gay couples, would the left threaten? Oh, let's deny their tax-exempt status. The income tax is not primarily a revenue generation scheme anymore. I mean, sure, it does collect money for the government, but its real purpose is to collect power for politicians. Politicians realized very quickly that people would pay, with money and with votes, to get special treatment under the tax code. Give me this tax break for building a windmill. Give me this tax credit for buying this hybrid car. Use taxes to keep competitors out of my market. The power to tax is the power to destroy. The power to discriminate in the tax code is the power to pick and choose who you will destroy. And people with the power to destroy you or your competitors are in a great position to solicit contributions. That's why the argument over Citizens United is so stupid. The tax code created a market. When politicians have the power to treat people unequally, only a fool wouldn't spend the money to get the best treatment he could buy. The problem isn't the market. The problem is the power. And the power comes from the income tax. It's time to replace the income tax. It needs to be replaced entirely with a retail sales tax. Tax everything equally, excluding food and housing. But that would take power away from politicians, which, as far as I've been able to tell, has never happened anywhere peacefully in the history of man.
I'm with you there, buddy. About a 15% retail sales tax?
I don't know, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
The fair tax, you know, it sounds like it would be a good idea, but the whole prebate, and it just seems kind of weird.
Yeah, they're replacing one complicated system with another slightly less complicated system.
Right.
That would still, it would wind up the same thing.
Yeah, just don't tax food.
Yeah.
You know, and your house.
Right. So, for me, people with awful kids who tell you how to parent.
Which is all of them.
You were here with Ben,
mm-hmm.
my son. He was 3 when you were here. I mean, he's still 3. It's only a couple of months later. But, you know, you comment about how well-behaved he is and you know, he's generally a nice kid, right? Pretty good kid.
I thought of him as a fairly normal 3-year-old.
Yeah. So we get comments all the time. Oh, he's so well-behaved. He's, you know, he's so nice. He's so polite. You know, he says yes, sir, and no, ma'am, and, you know, all that stuff, introduces himself. Well, that, you know, comes at a cost, right? We have to train him how to do that, right?
Right. My backside knows the cost of that.
Right. So when we're out in public or at family's house or friend's house or, you know, birthday parties or whatever, and he starts to go down that road of I'm going to throw a fit over something that's absolutely not fit worthy,
mm-hmm.
we will get on to him and correct him and you know, make sure that it doesn't escalate to screaming fit in the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And just about every time we do that, somebody will say, he's so nice, you know, you don't need to get on to him like that. And every single time, I just want to look at this person and say, really? Do you think he's nice because we don't ever get on to him?
Yeah.
Like, you know, let me just ask you something. If there were no rules, would you be nice to everybody? If you could go to the bank and just walk in and take out all the money with no repercussions, you'd probably do that, right? Screw everybody else. I don't care. It's the same kind of thing. And usually these people who are telling me, oh, no, you know, you don't need to be so hard on him, are the ones with the kids who are running up and down screaming in the hallway.
Yeah.
My kids would never do that more than once.
You didn't want my father to get to 2. God help you if he ever said 3.
Oh.
I don't get it. But, you know, it's not anything new. I mean, my parents had the same problem when they were raising me. So, don't think it's going to change.
No, I don't think it's going to change.
Oh, well.
But that's what this section's for.
Yeah. It's not like anybody's going to replace the income tax just because
exactly.
I said so. So, yeah, why should we consider that people are going to say, hey, you know what? You're a great parent. You're doing a good job. I support you.
Yeah. Not going to happen.
How about, oh, you poor dear. I know this is hard for you. You keep at it. This is obviously working because look what a great kid you have most of the time. No, they can't say that.
No.
Jerks. Well, that's our show for the week. Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music, and thank you for listening to the Gunblog Variety Cast. Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com and hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com. Show notes can be found at GunblogVarietyCast.com/episode46. We'll be right back.